I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, the Talbot Matra Rancho. I need to start this show with a couple of apologies. The first one is, you know, last week I was talking about how my Land Rover Defender had wounded me when combined with a sprightly run and had knackered my left calf
because of
heavy clutch calf.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a kind of very small leather bag that a lady might carry to a formal event. But in my case, just sort of agonising. So anyway, I've been stretching and rolling out the calf and just generally not running, looking after it, and all felt fine. Went for a little run, no problems. So started just sort of going running again as and when. And then yesterday morning, went for a bit of a brisk early doors run. Beautiful morning, crisp, cool air, sun was shining. It was lovely. And my bloody calf went. But the other one, the right one, which leads me to think that it wasn't really related to my Defender. It was related to being an old fucker who shouldn't be running about so much.
Hang on a minute. Are you apologising publicly to your own car? Because that's the impression that I'm getting. Yes.
I suppose yes, I am.
Which is a little odd.
It's a bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can I just claw it back by just saying that I don't call cars she, you know, in that way that...
No, I don't.
Burks do sometimes. Oh, she's got some grunt. What'll she do? It's not a woman. It's a car, you tit.
My daughter keeps asking which cars of ours are what gender they may or may not be.
And yes, but she's a child. That's she okay.
Is, there is a caveat. Yes, she is definitely a child.
Children anthropomorphise things all the time. That's all right, but then they should grow out of it. They shouldn't be a 57-year-old man who's going, oh, she's got a bit of poke.
There's one exception to that rule.
Go on.
Traction engines. Steam traction engines. I feel like they are old enough and strange enough.
They are strange, aren't they?
They're so beautifully strange because they just look like an Industrial Revolution factory on wheels. And that's why I think they're brilliant. So I almost think that they are allowed to be called a he or a she because they often have names like a steam train. They're called,
yeah, they do,
I don't
don't
know.
They?
Yeah, they're called Delilah Sovereign or something.
Yeah. Betsy Collins.
Yeah.
Who? What? Eh? Hmm. I always associate traction engines sort of somehow with being a kid, not because, you know, I grew up in the Industrial Revolution so much, that there used to be a traction engine rally near where I grew up.
Yeah, me
and
too.
We'd go and see it when we were a kid. I guess there were. It just feels like I haven't seen a sign for a traction engine rally for like 30 years, but I feel like there was one every week when I was little.
As soon as one is allowed to be put on again, can we make a pact that we go?
Well,
and we take a camera or a microphone with us.
But under the sort of current guidance, I don't see why one couldn't happen because they're pretty socially distanced because most of the people who run traction engines are kind of loners, and all that steam might be quite cleansing.
There's also because these machines are coal hungry, I've noticed there's a colossal amount of BO being bandied around.
Yeah.
If it's a weekend event.
Keeps a distance. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the summer as well.
It's a summer weekend event. And most of them have caravans which don't have their own shower or toilet facilities, so you're like, oh well, there's just gonna be some amazing Industrial Revolution bobo going on here.
Would it kill you to just do a wet wipe shower or something in your caravan first? Well, I mean, they're blithering on about the heat wave happening this week, so if we could crack on and get something organised for this coming weekend, then that'd be smashing.
That bloody would.
Actually, I had a double win on the traction engine front because I grew up in the northwest, and occasionally Fred Dibner would turn up to traction engine rallies. In fact, we saw him once on the road. We saw him in Mobley, which is a village in Cheshire, going along on a traction engine.
Just
on
a day out.
It was really exciting. Yeah, I don't know. He'd probably just go and get the paper or something.
Did he used to have, like, groupies who were probably men and women, actually, of a certain age?
Yeah, I'm going to say mostly men. Like, where Tom Jones was getting knickers thrown at him, I think probably... Fred Dibner.
What was Fred getting?
Reading glasses. pints of real ale,
cigarette cards,
flat caps, loads of flat caps.
Oh,
he ended up just selling them on a stall at weekends because he had so many of them they'd been thrown.
How do we describe this to any listeners who are not from the UK
Fred
or who
Dibner?
Are under 30?
Where do you start? Like, imagine the most northern man you've ever imagined in your life. That's him. And also, I watched a documentary about him once on the TV, and he said the most hauntingly sad thing I've ever heard in my life, and it's lived with me. This was like 20-odd years ago, and it's lived with me ever since. He was describing how his wife left him, and he's being interviewed about this on camera, and he said, well, yeah, I went to go and get some parts from a man in Macclesfield, and when I got back, she were gone. And
that's it?
Yeah.
But I didn't even know his wife had left him.
From a man in Macclesfield. It's like Victoria Wood couldn't write a line that hauntingly sad. Yeah, sort of so sparse and functional. And it makes me so sad for him. And he seemed all right about it, but that's probably because, you know.
He was married to the machinery.
He really was. It's a good name for his autobiography if he was still with us. I wonder, has he got an autobiography? He must have an autobiography.
I'm sure he
for
did.
Context, I've just realised as well, if we are explaining Fred Dibner, he was actually a... what do you call them? The people who bring chimneys down?
Steeplejack. He was a demolition expert, and that was what he became notorious for in the papers and... on national news and stuff, because he'd bring down all these big old industrial chimneys, but he was always quite sad about bringing them down because he had a massive affiliation with I suppose the old mills and the Industrial Revolution era. So on the one hand, he was great at like felling a chimney and not killing people around him. On the other hand, he didn't really want to fell it in the first place. Did he smoke a pipe?
Yeah, I think he might have.
I think
done.
He was a proper pipe smoker, and his face was always black with coal dust and
I feel like
just general detritus.
Because he was a Lancastrian bloke of a certain age, I feel he probably wasn't prone, at least publicly, to introspection. You know, he was very much a no-nonsense sort of guy.
But if
he had been, you could have made a really solid, interesting documentary or book out of what you've just described, Dibner's dilemma. He must destroy what he loves.
I think Fred Dibner, in a world now where sadly it seems that, and this is quite serious, male suicide seems to be really on the up, especially younger men, you know, men under 40.
Yeah.
I actually think someone like Dibner, if he was still alive, someone with his temperament, could be like a really good counselling buddy. Because he'd just tell it like it is, and he'd almost make you go, yeah, actually, why am I doing that? Why am I thinking that? Yeah, let's just crack on, and let's make a fire in the garden.
It's a good point, isn't it? I feel like Fred Dibner's the kind of bloke who, after knowing him for barely a few minutes, he would manage to make me cry with his warmth and no-nonsense advice.
Definitely.
He's just... Can you imagine him putting his arm around you? He's made you a brew, and he puts his arm around you and says, don't worry, it's going to be all right. And then you go out and you make a fire, and you sit by the fire. And for a while, you don't really say anything, but it doesn't matter.
I can imagine, if you turned up at a steam rally and you were with Fred Dibner, it would be like just turning up to the Glastonbury Festival with Keith Richards just casually and just stopping the entire event dead. And I'm saying that because I'm sat about 3 miles away from Glastonbury as I speak, so I'm feeling quite
because you're in Zurzad.
I'm in a rented house, you know, like a holiday let thing with very thin windows, and it's near a road. And it's not, I think it's because my wife's in the other room. I feel like it's not unfair to say it wasn't as described. I was hoping for some more idyll, and what I'm getting is a lot of TDI, actually, in the morning.
A lot of TDI?
Yeah, because I forgot, I haven't lived in Somerset since I was 18. I think Somerset people do like a thrifty diesel. there's a lot of rural communities, and they do like, you know, a hardy, clattery, long-lasting diesel.
Mm.
There's a lot of them about, and there was one this morning. It went past. I had to chuckle. It was a Citroen C5 Estate, and it was. It would have been HDI, right, wouldn't it? I think probably.
Yeah.
It went by, and you couldn't see anything after it. Anything. But it was white smoke, so I think engine failure is nigh.
Ooh. Yeah. That's not... Okay, yeah, that's just failure on the horizon, isn't it?
It was... I did chuckle, but at the same time, I thought, oh, that smoke is lingering for a really long time. It's not just 3 seconds and it's gone. It's not that kind of smoke.
And it's got an acrid quality to it. It really gets in the back of your throat if you breathe it in as well. Horrible. I was wondering about this the other day, and what currently is the worst driven car on British roads, and I sort of feel like it's still the Citroen Picasso in all its many varieties.
What, the original, the Zara Picasso? The
Zara Picasso, yeah. Particularly. You see, yeah, all manner of fuckwittery from those. You know, and it's very easy. People go, oh, it's Audis, it's BMWs. And it's like, no, it's not. It hasn't been BMWs for years. And Audis, yes, there's a lot of aggressive
driving. Actually, there is a lot of Berlinery in Audis, I think.
A lot of Berlinery, but just bad driving. Like, that sort of almost, an Audi up your arse is willfully bad driving. Whereas Zara Picassos, you see being driven in a manner which suggests that the driver has simply no idea how much they're inconveniencing other people or putting them on edge by their inability to stay in a lane or indicate, or... You know that thing that people do when they're just so crappingly stupid and selfish that they just stop wherever they feel like because... They're thinking about and doing is the biggest issue in the world, except it isn't.
Well, that's what certain people do in the doorway of a supermarket. So, you know, you get your list out your pocket, or you get your phone out with your list on, but they stop right in the actual doorway to look down at the list and go, right, first things first, cabbage. Okay. And it's like, you're in the middle of the doorway. No one can walk around you. Everyone's got to wait for you to look at your list. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think, I always feel like, you know, it's a...
Zara Picasso's interesting. I mean, I like Zara Picasso's because I think they're wonderfully utilitarian. There's one of our friends who drops their kids off at school has one, and it's properly worn and baggy, a bit like some very comfortable slippers. And she makes no bones about it. She's like, it owes me nothing. It won't die. I like it. I don't like the fact that, you know, people drive around, they feel they've got to peacock with, I don't know, displaying their wealth with their vehicle.
Yeah.
And she bucks that trend. However, but also the Zara Picasso is now synonymous with Ronnie Pickering, the internet sensation, slightly gammon man.
Yeah, but he typifies the Zara Picasso driver because he's obviously a tit. So
he's
a... I think that's unfair. I think Zara Picasso drivers aren't tits. I think they're just... It was really good car casting, whether deliberately or not, that they gave Uncle Bryn in Gavin and Stacey a Zara Picasso.
Yes.
Because he's exactly the kind of well-meaning sort of chap who knows absolutely bugger all about cars and is probably, by extension, a fairly hopeless driver because he's sort of not interested in it and it's something he does to get around. But he has sort of jolly can-do attitude towards something that he's conspicuously incompetent at. And he very much sort of sums up the spirit of Zara Picasso for me, based on the stuff that you see out on the roads. Not so much around where I live, weirdly. It's almost like there's pockets of them. Because I was down in Kent and there seemed to be quite a lot.
There's a few round here, and there, I would say there's two types. There's either it was bought in bad condition anyway, and it's going to be run into the ground, and probably there's a lot of dogs in the wind. You know, sort of, you know, a really quite downtrodden dog car. And then there's the other one where it's functional, but driven by quite an earth mother. A woman that she lots of natural products and enjoys interesting drapey kind of clothes.
Yeah, a lot of very long skirts.
Yeah, and those very small Indian chimes as a bangle around the wrist.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe a dream catcher hanging from the rearview mirror. Now I see you on that one, and I know the kind of person you're identifying here, but I'm going to say that for them, car-wise, Picasso is beaten by Berlingo.
Oh, Berlingo.
I think they would orientate towards a Berlingo because it's got a little bit of the spirit of a Renault 4 or a 2CV about it.
It does.
And those cars always sort of seem to draw, you know, sort of what people might have once sort of said, it's like hippie-ish kind of people, you know, very sort of earth mother-y, laid-back-y sort of product-y.
New age traveller, but who's realised that you have to have a fixed abode now because otherwise it's just really difficult to register for stuff. So, it's exactly like the Berlingo. And there'd be on the cubbies would be stuffed with all manner of homeopathy. all manner of it. wouldn't it? You know, all those cubbies above your head. So if you did a really fast reverse and then put the brakes on, you'd just be showered with...
Got tiny bottles of oils just raining down on you.
Just oils and homeopathy to stop hay fever and... little handkerchiefs that are hand-stitched and all sorts.
I also to pick up on something you just said about Zara Picasso's as battered dog wagons, I think we have to be clear that it's always multi-dog, never just one dog, unless it's a simply enormous dog. And even then, there's probably two of them. But usually it's a multi-dog, and the driver is wearing a fleece that on closer inspection... is 65% dog hair.
Oh, I'm itching just thinking about that. I'm quite uneasy.
And we're not going back to you and dogs, because I think the last time we talked about dogs, you threatened to kick one in the face or something, and a couple of people in the comments went,
"Oh, what? Kick a dog in the face?"
Yeah, you said it again.
Oh, I know another. There's another car around here which I've noticed, which seems to be a particular favourite. And it's a bit doggy, but not like collections of dogs. It's the very, and I like these, I've got a bit of a thing for them, a very narrow off-roader from the, say, late 90s, early 2000s. I think, is it a Daihatsu Terios?
Yes.
It's extremely narrow. You know, like, it's pleasantly narrow for narrow back roads. So it's fit for purpose. It's the total opposite of a Land Rover Disco 5.
Yeah.
And I saw one only this morning with a lady with a quilted gilet on.
Oh!
It had the back seats down, and I suspect that they were down because there's a permanent resident dog there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was very narrow.
We went on holiday this summer in a Disco 5 that I borrowed, and I'd forgotten about that car. That everyone sort of just focuses on its wonky arse now, don't they?
They do.
All everyone I talk about. You go Discovery 5, oh, the one with the wonky arse. Which the we called in to see some friends of ours, and my mate came out of his house and went, "Oh, is this?" And I went, "It was the Discovery. It's been out for a few years." And he went, "Is this the one with the wonky arse?" "Yeah, it is. Yeah, but." I tell you what a family car. It's really good. Well, because we've got two kids and we've got a dog, which is quite large, and we all went away in it.
So you took the dog with you?
Yeah, we went up to the top of Norfolk, which, again, thank God we took a Land Rover, because it's like a bloody Land Rover commercial up there. North Norfolk, you know, it's a bit posh in places, and it's all people from, you know, other cities.
London
mainly, I suspect. And, yeah, it's at one point, there was a little cafe. It wasn't. It was a little delicatessen with a cafe attached in the village where we were staying. And there's a playground next to the deli. And we...
Of course, also known as a scrapyard.
And we called in there on our way back from somewhere. And we thought, we'll let the kids have a little play in the playground where we go and grab a couple of things from the shop. Deli. And I counted, I think, 5... Discovery 5s in that car park, including the one we had, and there were only about 10 cars. It was insane, and a lot of Discovery Sports and a lot of Range Rover Sports and Sport.
I was going to say, what were you thinking just then? Just letting
Forgive
that one
me.
Slip.
Sport.
Is that the one where the wife shouts out?
Yeah.
Hey, Len, you know, are you going to get in the sport?
Um, Speaking of which, sorry, I'm just doing what I did on our holidays, because we also went down to Kent last week for a night in a teepee, a bit of glamping, which was actually really nice. You know how I hate camping, but it was really good. We took the Jag for that one because we didn't have the dog with us and we could get things in the boot.
You're just like a non-stop talking overheard in Waitrose at the moment.
I know.
And of course we went down to Kent in the teepee, but we took the Jag that time. And
no, but you know how Kent, it's like, obviously people always go, Essex, you know, Essex. You know, sort of people who are from the east side of London who've done all right, you know. It's like cabbies in there. But there's a lot of jingle jangle in Essex. But actually, the jangle travels with the prevailing wind across the Thames Estuary into Kent. Because we were on the way down there. We stopped in, I don't even know what the town was. I can't remember now. We pulled off the M20, which is one of those weird motorways that you sort of feels made up, but we
what
pulled
do you
off
mean
there.
Feels made up.
Well, M20 sounds like something they'd have on Casualty. They go, oh no, there's been a big crash on the M20, and you go, that's not a real motorway. You just put that in the script so that it sounds plausible. But there is an M20 because I've been on it. It's the, everyone knows actually. It's the one that goes to the Channel Tunnel and Dover and Chisholm.
Oh, but, yeah, that one. Yeah.
But anyway, it should have a proper name.
It's a no through road, effectively.
It is basically, isn't it? Yeah. Please do turn around at the end. But the town where we pulled off the M20, we promised our kids, because it was a holiday, that they could go and have McDonald's, and we pulled off to a McDonald's, and they had you could sit down and a big window looking out onto the main road going past. The number of Range Rover Spuwaters that I saw being driven by rather over tanned men of a certain age was extraordinary. In the same way that it's like the number of discoveries and Discovery Sports I saw in North Norfolk was extraordinary. I was looking at both of them. I was going, how is Land Rover not the most profitable car company in the whole world? Because they sell a deceptive number of cars in specific pockets of England.
Yeah, they do. And then they've got to service and repair all of them. So
insane amount of money.
Yeah.
Yep. Did I tell you what was the quote for a full service on my Defender at a main dealer was, I think
didn't
it was,
you say it's nearly 500 quid?
Oh God, no, it's more than that. I think that was a minor service. I think it was it 800 or 900 pounds for a major service?
Well, for a Defender.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You're going to need two things for this. You're going to need a hammer and a screwdriver, and you probably won't use the screwdriver very much. So why are you charging me 800 quid for it?
They've just filed that under charge them the same as the normal Range Rover, haven't they?
Clearly. Basically, yeah. Yeah.
What's
that's
weird
the,
is actually...
The Range Rover pulls everything up, I think.
I did a double take 2 days ago because I was just travelling into Taunton and a Huey edition Defender pulled in front of me, the same colour as yours, 15 plate, would it have been? Mm-hmm. It was... I didn't clock it at first, but my dad said... Oh, hang on, has Richard got the van version? I went, oh yeah, God, my dad's on it today.
Wow.
He noticed the lack of back windows, but it was a last edition van, commercial, whatever you want to call it. Which was probably a lot of money for a van.
Hard top, I think they called it. Well, I think they're about 28 grand, maybe.
Were
I forget now. They probably quoted the price with no VAT on it, though, didn't they? Because, you know.
Of course, no VAT. No
claim
VAT.
The VAT back. Yeah. where were we? We were somewhere else before this, talking about something. Oh, yeah, I still owe another apology. I did the apology to my Defender, which I now realise was weird, and thank you for pointing that out. But I owe an apology to you as well.
Do you?
Yeah, because I misled you. Last week, we were talking about how I'd got a new neighbour who'd got an old Toyota Corolla that I was slightly fascinated with because it was tidy for its age.
Yes, it's the three-door
one.
That.
Yeah. And you said, is it the bug eye? And I went, oh, yeah, it is. Well, it's not. I was talking out my arse. I realised I'd only seen that car from the rear and the three-quarter, and I guess maybe they didn't change the front wings. So from that angle, it looks like it's got the bug eyes. But this week, I finally saw the front, and in fact, it's the facelift one, which is slightly more attractive, relatively speaking. Sorry for misleading you about that and talking nonsense. But the reason that I really bring this up is because I had an email in the aftermath of our last podcast from a guy called Greg Hewitt. Hello, Greg. And he says, Dear Smith and Sniff, I was listening to this week's podcast when Mr. Porter drew attention to an ex-reg Toyota Corolla 3-door that had recently moved into his street. Upon hearing this, I thought to myself, yeah, seriously, honestly, it's a genuine email from Greg Hewitt. Upon hearing this, I thought to myself, a friend of mine has an X-Reg 3-door Corolla, as someone who pays too much attention to such things is prone to do. Living in Highgate myself, which is just up the road from where I live, and my friend being local too, I thought, hang on, doesn't he, brackets Richard, live around here? And chalked it up to chance. A moment later, it hit me. Wait a minute, my friend just moved house too. This felt like too much of a coincidence, and I am really curious to see if it is in fact her car you were talking about. She very kindly sent a photo of the car in question, and I was wondering if you'd be able to identify it. Well, I looked at the picture. It's taken on my street.
Oh, is it?
And from the angle, I think it's been taken from the front door of the rented house where the new people have moved in. So Greg has contacted his friend and gone, could you just take a picture of your car, please? I dread to think how he's explained it, but basically I think he's had to say, someone who lives around your new house is talking about your car on their podcast. And I find that so weird that I think I'm going to have to move.
That's amazing.
It makes me slightly uncomfortable that I've inadvertently stalked somebody. But all is not lost, and it's not a completely embarrassing situation because we have fresh information as well about the Corolla. Greg goes on to say, if it is the right car, you guys are indeed correct. The car is a hand-me-down from her grandparents, who owned it from new. It celebrated its 20th birthday this summer and is still going strong.
There you go, you see. Yeah.
So at least we've had some closure on that. He's also said, I haven't asked her myself if you could have a go because I find the idea of the awkward cold call too funny.
The power of Smith & Sniff. I feel like the power is gaining. Traction is gaining.
Yeah, I suppose. I find this both excellent and weird at the same time, and it's a kind of new emotion in a way. So anyway, well, thank you, Greg, very much for getting in touch. I mean, that is quite weird and brilliant. There's such a small world that you could identify this car and give us some background info on it. So thank you very much for getting in touch.
Also, it could only be us that revel in with such excitement at the fact that it is one of the most dull cars around, really. It's just an ultra-reliable, as we called it, the cockroach. And it happens to be 3-door, which is why I suspected, oh, that's definitely grandparents' spec.
Mm.
And sure enough, it was grandparents' spec.
It really
spec.
Is. From new as well. I mean, that just adds to it. That really makes it.
I love it.
The perfect example of a cockroach car. It's a family heirloom, practically.
Toyota are missing a trick. They should have the Patek Philippe watch style adverts, whereas you never own a Corolla. You're simply a custodian for the next generation.
You merely keep putting petrol in it for the next generation.
That's what it is. And,
P.S. Do remember to check the oil.
Yes, exactly. And the washer fluid periodically, yeah. But I actually think that could work for Toyota because it's a given that it's going to be reliable. It's just whether or not it's interesting enough.
Mm. But it's weird, isn't it, how even the most deeply uninteresting car sort of becomes more interesting by dint of its survival capabilities / backstory.
Oh, 100%. 100%. That's why you get these really undesirable but immaculate low mileage cars that pop up, and we all get giddy about them. Like, wow, look, it's a 4-door Talbot Horizon that's done 8,000 miles from new. Well, nobody really wants a Talbot Horizon, I don't think, but it's done 8,000 miles from new in 40 years, and that's the attraction.
Oh, shitting heck. We haven't talked about momentous developments in the last 2 weeks. There are currently two Talbot Matra Ranchos for sale in the UK.
Two?
Yeah, and
out of the four available in...
Well, I checked this. Yeah. I checked this on that How Many Left site, and it says there are currently 10 ranchos in the UK, and only two are taxed.
Only two?
The other eight are sawn. Yeah. So 20% of all existing ranchos in Britain are currently for sale. There's that white one, which you and I have been sent by well-meaning people for about 2 weeks now, because everybody who sees it's amazing.
It looks
very sweet that people go, there's a rancho for sale. Better send it to those two twats off Smith & Sniff and that hubnut guy as well, Ian.
Oh, yeah.
We're like the only three people in Britain who are interested.
I I saw that and it looks mint, and I think it's £7,500. And if people don't know what we're talking about, the Matra Rancho was a French car that it predates soft roading, doesn't it?
Mm, yeah.
And it predates this idea of kind of SUVs. SUVs that don't necessarily go off-road, you just get the high-up look and the adventure feeling surrounding
crossovers. Crossover.
And they were, I suspect, one of the most profitable things about them was that they sold the rights to make die-cast models like Matchbox toys and the other little toys, which I forgot the name of.
Dinky.
Yeah, it might have been Dinky. Corgis.
Corgi, because I've got two of those Corgis, because I've got my original one from childhood, which is red. But then I've got a green one in a really battered box that I bought to give to you on your birthday as a backup in case the thing I wanted to give you didn't turn up, which was that.
W126 S-Class. Yeah, you gave me the 500 SE or SEL.
Because that was the car that came out in the year you were born, and the Rancho didn't. But I just thought, I'll have a backup Rancho because I know you'll like it. And I've still got that. I shouldn't have told you because I'm giving it to your birthday next year.
I was going to say, you could just wait until February.
Yeah, because I deliberately haven't opened the box. So I was like, well, this will make a nice gift at some point. Anyway, but yeah, the Rancho with its wheel arch extensions, and it had spotlights by the base of the A-pillars.
That's right. Just
fantastically cool, and big roof bars and all sorts of bits of cladding.
And
it was basically
stepped roof,
stepped
roof
like a disco,
like the Discovery.
Before disco,
yeah, it was 10 years before the Discovery, probably. Yeah,
even more, I think. Because I think the Rancho came out in like 77, I think.
Did it
originally? Yeah.
But it's a cool. It's even when you find out it's not a four wheel drive and the engine is just a bit of a Simca-y clatterbox, you still, I think, bodily, and the functionality inside of the layout of the seats and everything, and that kind of coachman seating position, I just think it's awesome. But when people send you adverts for them, and very rare they are, I keep having to reply to people going, I really like Ranchos, but I would never own one in standard form, because the whole attraction for me for a Rancho would be to do with it what it probably should have always been. And that would be, I would resto mod it. And I think we've had this conversation on a previous Smith and Sniff, where I said I convinced Robert Singer that I was going to send him one and make him do it.
Rob at Singer, not Robert Singer.
Not Robert.
Entirely different. I don't know who Robert Singer is.
Rob.
just a bloke that you met on a bus.
Yeah, exactly. Rob Dickinson at Singer Porsche Cars off of America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of £1 million delightful nine. Well, are they £1 million quid? They probably are if you options on them, aren't they?
Well, you know, by the time you've got a cigarette lighter and a passenger mirror. Yeah,
we've had the cigarette lighter bespoke wrapped in calves leather to match the steering wheel or something. Yeah, they'll do anything you want. But so essentially, you should still buy one of these Ranchos, but then just put it away until you've got £1 million to be able to have it shipped to California, so that Robert Singer can have it resting on it.
Don't tell everyone, but
you won the lottery.
No, I would tell everyone, I think, but I am. When I do buy one, I'll buy one from France, and I'll buy one with a doggy engine, and then it'll be
left-hand drive.
Yeah, but I don't mind about that, because there's only like 2.5 right-hand drive ones left, so I would feel like they're too precious to cut up. There has to be...
Okay, yeah, okay.
You know, the right-hand drive ones have to stay original, but a lefty, you know, the only ones you see for sale regularly are on French websites, not that I know, honest. And
it's because your wife's the next room.
Yes, saying, it's true. It's because my wife's the next room. It's absolutely true. But yeah, I do think they're very, very, very cool. I feel like in the same way that, you know, like the William Towns Lagonda Aston Martin has suddenly captured the spirits of collectors for having sat in the doldrums, really, for decades.
Has it?
Well, I feel like in the last 10 years, people have suddenly woken up and gone, you know, distinctly strange cars should be celebrated, especially when the designers went on to do other stuff. And the Lagonda's one of those. And then the Towns Hustler, the sort of strange buggy based upon mini subframes that the same guy designed in the late 70s.
He was not a fan of a very visible curve, was he, William Towns? He preferred a crisp edge.
There's absolutely no way he would have bought a bubble-shaped Micra.
No way. Oh, God, it would have revolted
on
him.
He would have spat on it. It would have hate. And what's that other really bubble? Was it a Celica? Celica GT4.
Oh,
he would have never owned one.
Despised it. Well, it's funny, love. He would have liked the early 80s Celica. A lot of straight lines on that.
Oh, yeah, he loved that. And then they suddenly went bubble, didn't they? And he couldn't stand it.
Yeah, oh, my God, he'd have been furious. Yeah.
And he probably has one of those, Williams, you have one of those potting sheds, which I saw recently. There's a neighbour of my mum and dad's that have got one. You know those garden sheds that are sort of designed to look to be potting sheds? And they look like the front of an Intercity 125 train. Do you know the ones
what?
I mean?
No.
They were really, like, common in the maybe late 80s, 90s. Yeah, they're a garden shed which have a sort of pointy side to them with lots of glass at the top. It's to allow you put seed trays down and stuff.
Oh, okay, right.
In the window. Okay. But it looks like, honestly, I'd like to buy one and paint the top half blue and the bottom half yellow or the other way around.
Yeah.
Because it would look like a rubbish wooden Intercity 125 train. But yeah, I digress. You'll have to Google it when you're not listening to this, but they do exist. I just don't know the name of them.
Anyway, just to go back to the Rancho chat. So there's a second one now for sale. It's insane. It's a 1982. Okay. It's in a sort of what do you call that colour? Like burnt orange colour.
Oh, that's probably the best.
It's got 15,659 miles on it.
What, and it's right-hand drive?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's right-hand drive. They're asking... Well, I'll give you a few more details that are just simply delightful. It's got some stickers in the back window, including... There's loads of pics in this ad, which is great. One from Land's End. It's got the original dealer sticker in the back window. A sticker from Skegness, so it's been there.
So, where's it? Where's it from? Where's the dealer?
It's Minories. I never know how to pronounce it. I think it's a Midlands dealer.
Okay.
I'm just going to try. Minarize? Minarizes. I don't know. The number plate ends in RG. Where's RG? I don't know.
RG is. That's
it's got some Smurf stickers. It's got loads of stickers in the windows, side windows and the back windows, but it's all just like. It's got two.
It's been a well worshipped family car.
It's got two of those anti-car sickness strips that everybody finally figured out were bollocks.
As in the earthing strips? I got a new old stock one of those in a box in the garage.
Did you?
Yeah, I actually, by someone on Twitter, I got given two of them because they said their late grandpa ran a motor factors and they were helping kind of get rid of the last of the bits that were generally worthless, and they found them when I was building my electric drag car, and they said, would you like these for a bit of a joke? And I said, yeah, I'll have one. And I fitted one to the back of the drag car just for lols, because it has like a lightning strike on it.
Nice.
They were cack, weren't they?
Yeah, they were cack. It's got two of those on it, which is lovely.
Two.
So no car sickness there. Mm-mm.
Hang on, before we go any further, Rich, because this is like sort of drawn out foreplay. Can you tell me what the price is?
I was building up to that.
Carry on.
I wanted to tell you, it's got the interior looks immaculate. There's various no smoking signs all over it. So not just a non-smoker, but a vehemently anti-smoker owned it, I guess. And there's a picture showing that the tab light has never been used and the ashtray is squeaky clean and all this sort of stuff. The seats look immaculate, sort of orangey check centres over a creamy beige outer plastic. And it's got the pop-up. Two seats, rear-facing seats in the boot, of course. It's insanely tidy from the pictures, as you'd expect, because it's only got 15,000-odd miles on
it. Yeah.
But the price is £13,750.
Wow. So it's a dealer, I presume.
It's a dealer, yeah. It's a dealer in North Shields, in the northeast.
Bloody hell, I was only up there about 2 months ago.
you could have popped in and pretended
to have been interested and then driven it.
Well, yeah, pretend. I mean, you would have been interested. It's more you're just not interested in paying a considerable sum of money for it.
That sounds glorious.
It's amazing. I've got to say thank you to someone on Twitter who alerted us to this, or me anyway. I don't know if you were paying attention to that day when they sent it through, but there's someone on Twitter whose username is @CitronArcadian, and then their actual name is CitronArcadian-Peugeot205-Kia Soul. So their Twitter handle is basically the cars they own, I guess.
I'm glad mine isn't, because that
Twitter ringing you up going, you're breaking it. You're breaking the system. We can't accommodate that many characters.
Oh no.
What are you? Are you worried you're going to go and have a look at this rancho now if you're
That sort of is the problem. Now, I mean, it sounds, on the one hand though, lots of people, because the other one's $7,500, and I think on the one hand that seems like an awful lot of money. On the other, it's like find another. Well, when you say another, it's like, well, they are. There's two right-hand drive ranchos for sale, of which there's 10 in the UK, and the other 8 will probably be quite bad, and also not for sale. But you think, well, if I really wanted one, I probably would pay $8,000 or $9,000 for one. And findanother.com.
These two people selling the ranchos could actually get some kind of price fixing cartel going, and it's like, just go, well, go on, if you put it for $75,000, I'll put mine up for that as well.
Oh, I'd love that.
We'll smoke out Britain's rancho enthusiasts. I've just looked this up. RG is Newcastle's registration. So actually, I guess Minories is a northeastern dealer group.
Okay, but it's been to Land's End.
It's been to Land's End. It's weird, isn't it, that the mileage is so low, considering it seems to have been all over the frigging shop. But
I think it's like a progressive grandparent car, where they bought them new when they were pretty unusual, and they took the grandkids on a couple of interesting holidays. But the other trips they did during the course of the year were very short. And it was clearly garaged. And that's where the Smurf stickers come from. No smoking, I don't really know. I mean, maybe the dealer put them in. Who knows?
It's a good ruse, that, isn't it? Mm. Never owned by a smoker. Look how many no smoking stickers there are.
Yeah, but all the other stickers just seem a bit odd for a car that's so low mileage. It's not like it's been on that many adventures.
But there's a fabulous sticker in the back window. That's a circular green cross, and it just says, "This vehicle carries a first aid outfit."
What?
Which is weird.
What do you first mean, aid outfit? Outfit
makes it sound like there's a nurse's uniform under the passenger seat. I mean, that's just weird.
It sounds like role play, not helping you when you're medically in need.
Maybe that's what it is.
It's a role play car.
It's a swingers car.
Oh my! Well, it'd be quite a good dogging car. Lots of glass glazing around.
I suppose so, yeah.
Is it a side opening tailgate, or is it
no, it's top hinge.
Top hinge.
Now you've made top hinge sound dirty.
They did that song Dancing in the Moonlight, didn't they, or whatever it was called. can't remember.
One final lovely touch, it's got the registration number acid etched into the window glass. Period detail, my friend, you can't beat it.
I love all that.
Man.
There's something very special about buying a car off somebody who's had it a really long time and has completely worshipped it. And the detail is everywhere in the services, the organisation of the service history, literature, the way in which the interior has been preserved, the tool wrap and the spare wheel set up. Oh, lovely. Oh, that my little Fiat, the Polsky Fiat that I bought, was like that. That was very nice. Very nice indeed. A total pleasure.
Just one final detail which may push you over the edge. It's got a tow bar. Looks factory. You could tow a small trailer with it.
If there's anybody who wants to sponsor Smith & Sniff out there, instead of asking for actual money,
just have a rancho please.
It might be a little bit easier for us to deal with in terms of accounting. Yeah, can we just be gifted in immaculate older cars that aren't actually as desirable as people think? How about that? Would you go with that?
I'd go with that. The offer's there. Come on, people. I mean, you know,
and then
us, £13,750 is a lot of money because we don't actually make anything off this podcast at the moment. But for a large corporation,
but
we absolute
could film.
Drop in the ocean.
It could be an epic film. We drive up to to the northeast to get it. I'd like that. We could do a little tour of, we could do a Spender tour, we could do a Barber Jacket tour, lots of other northeastern things we can do, Get Carter tour, and then we can come back.
Someone told me something about Get Carter the other day, which completely threw me.
What?
And I can't, it's a bit of a spoiler.
If you've never seen it, or...
Basically, there's something that... You know when he's on the train going up to Newcastle?
Yes.
Michael Caine's character?
Yes.
When you watch back, apparently, and I haven't had a chance to do this, there's somebody on the train who is later significant in the film, but you don't know it at the time.
Yeah, he's the assassin.
Ah! Well, I wasn't going to mention that!
Oh. Well, Rich, the film...
Spoiler alert.
The film dates from 1970... I think. I'm pretty sure if you haven't seen it yet, I haven't really spoiled
it. It's a fair point. Yeah,
it's
like
a
going,
hell of a
oh,
film.
By the way, they're brother and sister, and Darth Vader's his dad.
It's,
well, I mean, if you haven't watched it now, when are you going to watch it?
Because Get Carter was the Mark II Cortina sort of hero car, wasn't it, that he drove in it when it would have been brand new, I think.
Yes. Yeah, because I guess that film was it
70 or 71, yeah. And it was the start of the sort of, it was the end of the flower power era, and it was the start of the 70s kind of dereliction.
Yeah, everything went very grey and gritty, didn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, you could argue that film was entirely responsible for the 70s. Or at least the look of the 70s.
Yeah, it's true.
Where's all the colour gone? Shut up!
I blooming love that. I love that film. Weirdly, yesterday I saw a Mark II Cortina, but because I'm in a slightly ley-liney, hippie-ish part of Somerset, it was all of the chrome had been painted black, and it was like a dark burgundy wine colour, four-door. And it was being driven by a guy with dreadlocks who was topless. And the thing that really drew my attention to it was the fact that it wasn't even a very warm day yesterday, yet he was topless. I was thinking, well, it's not like it's 30 degrees. You know, it's not. You know, he's in an old car, but is the car creating so much heat?
Perhaps the heater was jammed on.
Yeah, I've had a car with the heater jammed on, so I can feel his pain. But
can't stop looking at this rancho. There's so many pictures.
I want to see the interior, because that interior kind of tartan, that really lovely orangey...
Oh, it's brilliant.
I'm very attracted to that, to a strip of that.
It's amazing.
I've been thinking about doing something like that in the Allegro. So you sort of have a bit of a subtle twist on the original seat, but I don't think I can afford the tailoring fees, sadly.
I was going to mention the dealer where this was sale, but I feel like that's just free advertising for them. So if they want us to mention it, they need to give us the rancho.
Are you trying to hold them?
Yeah, extorting ranchos out of people now.
I tell you what, though, if we promise to drive the car around and do some adventures in it for the next 12 months, and they can have a medium-sized sticker on each door, how about that?
No, I don't want that. They might damage the paint.
Well, you know,
really
like regional cricket players, they always get lent at Kia Sorrento, don't they? Always.
Yeah, always. Or my little brother went to school with the son of Asa Hartford, who was a footballer in the 80s, played for Man City at the time. And I think he was quite good, but...
He was reasonably good, yeah.
Well, I think he was quite good. That's the thing. This is sort of pre-footballers getting silly salaries and living in sort of McMansions and things. He lived in a fairly modest suburban house, and he had a Peugeot 309 with his name on the doors.
He had a 309? Sweet.
From Tom Garner Peugeot in Manchester, I think.
That's quite
or maybe
cool.
County Motors. I can't remember now. Doesn't matter.
County Motors.
None of it really matters. Anyway, look, it's been fun to chat. And if you want to see this rancho, I'll put it up on Twitter or something and people can have a look at
you
it.
You could
there.
put if you're listening to this on YouTube, put it in the description.
I could do that as well, yeah. But I warn you now, Tynemouth Select or whatever you're called, you are going to have to at least let us have a go in the rancho.
I do feel like I need to touch the interior now. And really just drink it all in when you open the door.
If it smells like Peugeot Talbot cars used to smell in the early 80s, I will have a proper flashback of the kind that people who've taken massive amounts of acid only usually get. So, yeah, interesting.
Well, I have to hold you up.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, yeah, I'll swoon. I'll swoon, definitely. Anyway, that's it for another podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you do like this, then there's something wrong with you. But also, please do like and subscribe. I have three other pieces of information to share with you. First of all, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called Car Pervert, where he does excellent things. I was just watching your Mark 8 Golf GTI review, by the way. It's very good. I have a book out, if you're very bored. It's called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia by Sniff Petrol. And thirdly, the AdBlue that is put into modern diesel engines to take nitrous oxide out of the exhausts is made with synthetic ammonia and not actual urea as found in urine.
Oh,
just a little. I'm just adding. I'm trying to add value again.
Is that because it's become the demand for AdBlue's become high? There's not enough urine around.
Because the quality of animal urine is too variable, and synthesizing it gives a consistent product.
Oh.
Are you amazed that I knew that? You go on, admit, you're amazed that I knew that.
I'm amazed that you knew that. I'm also a little bit upset because I quite like the idea of like using all of the animal.
Piss.
Well, I like, you know, like if you're going to farm an animal for meat or whatever, you might as well use every single part of it, including its wee-wee. That's the first time I've said wee-wee in about 30 years.
And on that note, we end. See ya.
Bye. Oh, lovely.